Hello, and welcome to Girls Gone Canon Reads A Song of Ice and Fire, episode 223, Cat of the Canals in a Feast for Crows. I am one of your hosts, Chloe.
And I am another one of your hosts, Eliana. And yes, we are starting a new POV today. It's Cat of the Canals. And are you ready for meow, 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 meow?
Yeah.
That's how it ends. Meow, 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 meow. And then the next chapter is a little more meow, meow, meow.
It is amazing that, like, you open the chapter and she's like, I'm selling fish and I'm being trailed by tons of cats. I'm like, what a life. I wish that was me so bad. No, it's a blast. I love being in Bravos like this with Cat of the Canals, Cat Arya, Kataria.
Yeah, Katara?
Katara.
Wrong series.
Wrong series. But yeah, I'm loving being on the ground with her. Excited to jump in today with you to more of Bravos' waters.
Yeah. And as a reminder, this month, our Patreon episode is going to be Meowrcy. I really tried to make that work. The Mercy chapter, The Winds of Winter, Mercy chapter. That's available for patrons in the Stranger tier and above, $5 and up. Wow, Stranger, a different kind of Stranger, though, but also same kind of Stranger? Whoa.
Yeah, Stranger tier, can check that out and above. That's patreon.com/girlsgonecanon, C-A-N-O-N. And of course, if you're a patron in the tier Thunder and above, you can sign up for that, get access to our Discord, where we have tons of channels to check out with other fans and friends, as well as the Hot D channels, which are starting to come to life. And you also get access to monthly Brappy Hour, which is brunch/happy hour. It will be happening next this month in April, on April 20th, from 2 to 4 ET PM. So that's Thunder Tier at Patreon.
Yeah. And of course, as you all know, we started another series, The Hunger Games. And so we wrapped up the first book last month, if you want to take a quick listen to that. And we will be returning with the second book, Catching Fire, at some point. But, you know, got a couple of other things along the way. By the time you've gotten this, like, because we're doing a little time traveling here, right? By the time you get this, we'll already have figured it out. But soon we're going to let you know a little bit more about our plans leading up into Hot D season. We've obviously been thinking about this for a while. I'm actually really looking forward to the series. So they're like, it's here, the release date. Wee woo, wee woo.
Yeah, in real time, like, full disclosure, we are maybe one day away from finding out the release date. Hopefully, I think a new trailer is coming the day after we record this episode. So we will be able to finalize some Hot D plans and let you in on all the steamy action to come.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I know, I'm actually really fucking excited. No one can take away my dragon show from me. This one's fun. I'm having a blast with it.
And I know a lot of what happens, so, you know.
Yeah, nothing shocks me, and if it does, published. It's cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, okay. We'll talk more about that next time, so keep your ears and eyes peeled for that. But until then, we did get an email from our friend Thunderclap the other day, and I really actually liked this email. I was inspired by what he had to tell us.
Yeah, so Thunderclap says, last episode, when Sandor was fighting in the inn, it had some similarities to Origins of House Clegane. Sandor has a badly wounded leg, and three of Gregor's dogs died in the form of the Squire, Polliver, and the Tickler. The original Clegane was a kennel master at Casterly Rock and saved Tytos Lannister from a lioness, losing a leg and three of his dogs. He was rewarded with lands and a tower house, and his son was placed in Tytos' service as a squire, thus birthing the sigil of the three dogs he lost saving Tytos, on the yellow of autumn grass. The elder brother from the Quiet Isle could have had to amputate Sandor's leg to save his life if it was gangrenous. We have Thunderclap quotes, I buried him myself. This is not the voice of the elder brother. I'm sorry, everyone. I buried him myself. I can tell you where his grave lies, if you wish. I covered him with stones to keep the carrion eaters from digging up his flesh. And the elder brother also says, flesh, not body. So it might just be Sandor's like, oh, interesting.
I never thought about
me
that.
Me either. I just don't think about flesh enough. Well, I do, just not that
that's
way.
That's weird. Yes, you
I was
do.
Like, yes, I do. Not that way. Not that way. Anyways, Thunderclap quotes, "Where a brother bigger than Brienne was struggling to dig a grave, from the way he moved, it was plain to see that he was lame." And then, "How only visible from the waist up, a wooden leg wouldn't be visible. A brother's full-length robes would also hide this, and amongst them, the big grave digger they encountered on the hill, who walked with an awkward, lurching gait of someone who is half crippled." And then Thunderclap also says, "The only character I could find with a wooden leg is Spare Boot." And then, quotes, "Stout old kegs, as slow as ever, Spare Boot hopping along briskly on his carved wooden leg." Interesting, interesting.
It's kind of funny because a long time ago, I wrote some meta on Sansa and Sandor. Crickets. I wrote, look, it's 2024, not 2014, but it's funny because we're covering some of this in the Hunger Games, right? Where we're also pretending it's 2014 that we're doing on Patreon. Oh, but yeah, no, it's 2024. I'm not going to talk about Sansa and Sandor, but it's interesting because it makes me think of when, which is a connection in that meta that I wrote back in 2014. You know, we don't have to talk about it. That she thinks about Willis, how she could learn to love a lame man, she thinks. And there's that line, "Sometimes she would whisper his name into her pillow just to hear the sound of it. Willis, Willis, Willis. Willis was as good a name as Loras, she supposed. They even sounded the same, a little. What did it matter about his leg? Willis would be Lord of Highgarden, and she would be his lady." Now, it just reminded me of Sandor's leg, and at the time as an interest in her life, as an element in her life. Interesting. Interesting about the legs coming up with those two, but we really don't have a lot about people with, you know, missing a leg or having some sort of tool implement in place of their leg in this story. I've totally forgot about the wooden leg there.
I mean, PETA, you know, speaking of the Hunger Games also, missing a leg, wow. Hope I didn't spoil anyone. Those books have been out for a while. Biggest franchise in the world for a while. Anyways, yeah, I'm trying to think of who else I can think of who is missing a leg besides them.
In my head, Euron does have a pirate hook for a hand, but that's in my head. That's not from the book. Differently abled King Euron.
He's different. He's really different. And I'm trying to think of other people, but I can't, none come to mind right now. But regardless, this is very cool, very interesting. You and I already called out, we're like, ooh, yes, flesh, not body. Interesting. It's very Ned being like, "John is my blood," you know, kinds of wordplay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the flesh thing is really, that was, blew my mind, Thunderclap, thank you. Didn't even think about that. Like, that could be what's in the grave, which would be, because, you know, then he had the helm on there and the helm's been stolen. Like, all of it's kind of been false.
Yeah, exactly. And good catches. Also, I like the connection as well with how it goes back to those, the three dogs of the Clegane sigil.
Mm-hmm. Mind blown, seriously.
I just, like, don't think of this, is not, like, a dig on this, the Squire Polliver and Tickler as dogs, just because, like, you know, dogs are just much purer.
Better.
Yeah. Like, Ramsay's dogs don't know what they're doing. Like, they're just animals. They're just girls.
They've never been taught better. They're just girls.
They're just girls. And he does call them his girls. You know, they're just girls. That's all. I'm just like, they can't be dogs. They're not pure and cute. That's it.
Thank you, Thunderclap, for your email, as always. If you guys want to send in any emails about the episodes, you can send that over to girlsgonecanon@gmail.com.
Indeed. All right. C-A-N-O-N. One N. Well, two N's in total, but really.
Separate N's. The N's are separate.
Only one hump on the camel. Camel. Camel's cunt. We're going to talk about it today.
Whoa. Spoilers. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Let's get into our lightning round, Eliana.
All right, let's start off. Let's do it.
Elaine 1. Elaine meets the cast in the Vale of Arryn, and she learns some of their secrets.
It makes it sound like an intro song. Cersei 5. Cersei makes a lot of great decisions for the wonderful nation of Westeros. Cersei wants to drown kittens. What the hell?
Well, I'm not wrong. Brienne 5. Septon Maribald guides Brienne's crew to the Quiet Isle, and they speak of broken men.
Samwell 3. At the Happy Port, Sam punches Darion in the face. It's awesome.
Jamie 3. Jamie trains with Ilyn Payne. Jamie drinks his respect Brienne juice.
Cersei Finally. 6. These have been, like, really good lightning rounds lately, Chloe.
Thank you.
Cersei 6. Cersei visits the Sept of Baelor and feels that she has triumphed over the Sparrow.
The Reaver. Victarion agrees to his brother's mission with the goal that he shall do the cucking this time.
Jaime 4. Jaime learns some of the truth of Cersei's infidelity from Lancel.
Brienne 6. The Quiet Isle serves to reinvigorate Brienne on her quest to find the Stark girls.
Cersei 7. Cersei claims Taena's body through her right as queen.
Quote, unquote, quote, unquote. The views on this podcast are not endorsements.
Yes.
Jaime 5. Davin and Jenna tell Jaime who he takes after, and it's not Tywin.
Whoa. And that brings us here to our new POV. Cat of the Canals, A Feast for Crows. Cat of the Canals works her day job storing secrets by night.
We open with Cat, our new POV, awakening in a room that she shares with Brusco's daughters. She helps the girls get ready, and then she jumps on the boat with Brusco and sons to the fish market.
Reading these in order of, you know, Arya's chapters, it really is hitting home now that, like, she's sleeping in the same bed as this guy's daughters, right? These two sisters, and is working alongside their whole family, the sisters and the sons, like, two daughters, and what is it? Also, like, three sons, right? And obviously, that's ignoring, you know, and she's, like, the John, kind of the family, in a way. But, like, it's just her kind of living to an extent this like miniature fantasy of being part of a family, this sort of mimicry of her own. But also there's something that kind of struck me a little of her being that child in the nest of another family, their orphan that they brought in. Makes me think of the cuckoo bird, which is a bird that lays an egg in a different bird's nest and then like ends up, you know, being raised there, sometimes taking food from the other birds, and for some reason the bird like parent is never like, wow, this one baby that I have is really strange looking, does not look like the other species of my baby. Wow, how weird. But some people have actually discussed this in the context of Sweet Robin, Robert Aaron, and Littlefinger, whether or not that's the case. I only call this out because just the whole like cuckoo bird, mockingbird thing, it just makes me think of Arya and her sister, Sansa. That's all. Mm-hmm.
It's all over this chapter, too. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is like, oh, that's very Elaine. Oh, that's very Kat. Oh, that's, yeah, like, back and forth, especially with Elaine 1 and now. Very interesting. And I appreciate you explaining more of this scenario with this bird, because I only know the bird from the clocks in cartoons, when the bird comes out and goes, cuckoo, cuckoo. So yours is a way more fun explanation, but it also reminds me of like all those memes of animals where you have like a dog and a cat getting along, or a family of dogs and like a cat's in the middle, just like cuddled with them.
I'm
and like, it's normal
with those. Yeah. I'm obsessed with those ideas, but also that's where this, I just love inter-animal friendships. Okay. This is where the term cucking, a cuckold, right, comes from. Oh. The cuckoo bird. So yeah, there are theories, right, from people that Robert Aaron might actually be Littlefinger's child by Lysa, but I don't really know if that's the case or not. Maybe, maybe not. Could add some irony. Could not. It really might be John Aaron's kid. I mean, the kid's, like, obviously not the strongest kid, and he didn't have, like, apparently the fastest swimmers, so I don't know.
I like it either way. I think it's a fine theory. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't really, for me, it doesn't change the dial, you know, because story's not about him, so.
I'm not invested in it. It's just a theory I know exists, so.
Yeah.
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 It's now all you know. So the girls tell Arya that, oh, you were making noise in your sleep again. How embarrassing. I would hate that for me. Cat of the Canals thinks that she should not be having wolf dreams because she's not Arya Stark, but she can't rid herself of Arya Stark, try as she does, or of her wolf, Nymeria, who leads a pack in her dreams. She can't get rid of the two-legged dreams either, where she's constantly stumbling, looking for her mother through a wasted land of mud and blood and fire, stopped by a monster with a dog's head who's like, you can't save your mom. She really couldn't have done it, though.
What could it mean? What does all this symbolize? I just don't know about this dream. Eliana would tell you it means you have anxiety, probably, by the way. That's what she tells me about my dreams.
It probably does.
Probably. She probably does. You're right. Many things can be true. It could also be a symbolic dream meaning something, Eliana, you unfun
person. We'll talk about it in a second.
So, of course, there's that symbolism of what she was doing in the Riverlands, where she was basically treading through a wasted land of mud and blood and fire, being stopped by a guy with a dog's head telling her not to go after her family. Like, that's pretty much just what she did the whole last book. But I'm also struck by the language and how it reminds me of the Trident and of King's Landing and what could possibly happen later in King's Landing. There could be a big party, you know, a big blast or two. You just never know. And the Bad Show did something where Arya was in the vicinity. I don't know if that would happen in the books. I don't know how she'd get all the way back down from the north, but maybe she would. They make dragons and ships. But it is giving Riverlands War. And something also that's really gripping me, especially here, is how often Kat, quote-unquote, is kind of fumbling here to you know, be Kat. And very often it passes back over to Arya in the POV, right? Like, it's like, Kat did this, Kat did that. Arya can't figure out why she's having this dream. So she's still not no one. She's still Arya Stark at heart. It's interesting, like, even with the cuckoo bird, you're looking at she found a way to find a family, to have that found family all over again. No matter where she goes, she's gonna Arya Stark. And it starts to get a little stronger, her bond with being no one. Like, in The Blind Girl, there's only a handful of Arya-isms that pop up, but, and no big spoilers, you'll hear about this in our Patreon episode if you're over there this month, but for the Winds of Winter chapter, she's very immersed. There is no slippage in the name and the nomenclature of what she calls herself in that chapter. So, really interesting progression, and I really love that we just keep getting these openings with language about her and her mom, whether it's a dream, whether it's, you know, her feelings, just all these connotations with the other cat, Big Cat. And also that Nymeria is still so connected to Catelyn in the Riverlands, right? We're seeing what Nymeria sees pretty often, but also we're probably seeing what her dead mom sees.
Yeah, it's also actually very cool that she's strong enough to maintain that connection from overseas, right? People used to have to pay big money to make those overseas calls.
Well, and you think of Bran in the Wall and Jon in the Wall, right? And their wolves visions.
True. Yeah, so it does, like, work across big distances, and, yeah, there was something that you said about, like, her being with this family and stuff, and I do wonder, like, at the end of the chapter, does she resign? Does she give them a letter of resignation? Or does she just completely ghost and never show up to work again? Like, how does this... Anyway, like, she was sleeping in the same bed as these girls, so. Going off of that dream more, though, like, it's just really sad, you know? There's this line of, in that dream... She was always weeping, like a frightened little girl. Cats never weep, she told herself, no more than wolves do. It's just a stupid dream, and I guess cats don't weep. But wolves do howl. I assume cats just meow 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 a lot when they're sad. Anyway.
They howl out of loneliness. And out of wanting to play, out of boredom, out of sadness. Cats go, no, really, though, yeah. Jake does it every day, I'm not kidding.
I think I've heard
every day. Yeah, he'll howl like bloody murder to get our attention to come throw a scrunchy ball down the stairs so he can chase it and bring it back up.
Play with me.
He'll do that for hours, dude. Hours. So, it's the most important thing in his life.
It is.
Because he's a cat.
Jake is always weeping, and Arya in these dreams are weeping, and it's just as true. These dreams are just as true as the wolf dreams. They're just kind of different. It also makes me think of, I mean, Tyrion starts having kind of similar dreams right now at this time, right? He dreams of himself kind of looking a little like Meleys the Monstrous. He's got a second head, and he's like, oh, I'm really angry. And then he looks at the head on his shoulder, and he's like, oh, that head is weeping. What could it mean? And I'm like, what could it mean, Arya? And it's essentially revealing her other self, right? Not just the Nymeria self, but Nymeria's other true nature of, like, she really is just a child who wanted to save her mother, and she's just been scared this whole time, but she keeps repressing it with fear cuts deeper than swords, and, you know, she was just a frightened little girl, like Weasel.
Yeah, and you know, Kat's final moments, she was weeping.
Yeah, blood. It was very metal. That was a joke. She was scratching down her cheeks, but also weeping. Yeah.
Yeah. Kat wept. Jesus wept.
Oh my god. Yeah, 3 days later, here she is.
Brusco and his family take the boat along the long canal to the fish market in Silty Town, inspecting the morning catch, buying the best shellfish. They load up the boats, and Kat uses this time to set out on her task. Learn 3 new things, secrets in Braavos, the city of fog and masks.
Yeah, so apparently every single morning, the Titan of Braavos howls to wake everyone up. I remember one time someone made a joke about the Titan of Braavos being a mecha, and like both, and people like piloting it. I want to say it was supposed to be Davos and Stannis piloting it, like in like the Jaegers in Pacific Rim. That's what I have.
Ooh, mecha.
But I also have a new thing for all of you of, is the Titan of Braavos like that giant sphere thing in Las Vegas, right? Who is yellow, has a face, and like it wakes up and is very sunny demeanor in the mornings. So this is what I brought for you all as listeners.
I like that though.
The Titan the sphere. Is the sphere.
Is U2 gonna play? I don't know. I'm just kidding. You know, I've really soured on them since they, you know, forced all that music on our phones that one time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I'll never forgive. No, that was funny. That was weird. Like, why would they do that? That was so bizarre.
Never forgive.
Brusco inspects each day's catch, right? And he can tell, like, is this shellfish worth buying today? Based on just, like, he just knocks the barrel and, like, checks it and stuff. And I love those videos of, like, sushi chefs going to the fish market and being like, yes, this is a good one, and choosing the fish that they're going to serve each day. And it speaks to just like in-depth knowledge, right? Like really learning to see, learning how to feel what's good. It takes all of those senses to become an expert in this. And that's very much what Arya is learning in general throughout her training.
I love that. That's like exactly what Sirio started her with. You know, it's come round circle.
And it's like they're useful skills for like any... a lot of different kinds of trades, right? This is what it means to be in-depth and to truly, like, be in the moment and understand things. Also, like, earlier, you know, discussing the family dynamics of Brusco's family and Brea and Talia, these sisters who are close, and the number of children in the family. Like, I'm kind of like, are they, in a way, mirrors of Arya and Sansa? Like, not really in terms of personality, but the fact that, like, hey, here are these sisters... and they get to fucking be together, essentially.
Yeah, I definitely felt like also with all the boys.
Yeah.
Right? Then all the boys in the family. What is it, 9 kids or something, though? It's so many kids.
I guess it's not. It's 9 kids, so it's not exactly the same, but whatever.
It's not exact. But no, but it's definitely a parallel. I mean, she grew up in a big family, right?
We don't understand.
Yeah, I have no clue. I'm just making this shit up. No, I work with someone. You know, my dad has like 8 siblings, and that's a lot. My grandma popped them all out. You know, that's a lot. But I met someone at work this week whose mother, and so this woman's probably in her 40s or late 40s, early 50s. Her mother just turned 80, has 15 siblings. All, yeah, 15 siblings, all from the same, like, no several parents. It's pretty big. So that's kind of crazy.
Are any of them twins or, like, triplets? Did she just have to, like, pop them all out? Like, holy shit.
I guess I didn't ask. Or she comes from a family of 15. No, I'm sorry. Her mom comes from the family of 15. But either way, it's so many kids.
How did all the kids, like, did they just, like, how did they all get there?
I hope there were some twins, or maybe I don't. I don't know. It's a lot. It's insane. I'm like, that's crazy. So, but big families are a possibility. They are a thing. And I also... coming back to her kind of sticking out as the odd one, like you were talking about, right? Like that she's lumped herself into this family. She has like the dangerous job. Did you notice that she's the one that has to get the boat off the dock? She's the one that has to jump between the docks and like swiftly run and make it onto the boat, showing a couple of things, right? Like confirming her position as outsider. He doesn't have his sons do that. He doesn't have his daughters do that. He has her do that. He thinks, I need a small, lithe person that's able to run like this and jump like this. But it's also showing some of her agility and some of those improvement on her skills, right? Of being able to run, jump, and quickly and swiftly get between the boats and between the docks and jump into the boat and go.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's a pretty important skill. Like, imagine her, like, having these skills with the boat, being able to, like, run and jump for it, right? And then you contrast that with the time that she was on the boat in that, like, flooded Riverlands town, and she had to, like, stay off the top of the deck because, like, she had no skills at all. So it's really interesting to see that sort of development.
Interesting when you think about how she wanted to get steal that boat back at the God's Eye, too, right? My God.
Actually, she is... Sorry. Honestly, Arya could steal a boat now. I actually have faith in her being able to steal a boat now.
Yeah, not only steal, but be able to, like, direct it, absolutely, yeah. And do something with it.
I mean, her job again, is getting the boat off the dock all the time, so for sure. Oh my God.
Definitely interesting how much the boat is coming back, not just the Grand Theft Auto.
She can steal a horse. Yeah, she can steal a boat. Okay, so you know how you're always, like, and by you're always, I mean, during this fateful weekend in Chloe's life, someone asked her, how do you think Arya's going to get back to Westeros? And she goes, on a boat. And is Arya going to, like, is she going to steal the boat to go back? Or is she going to, like, I don't know.
Or commandeer it.
Yeah, exactly. Mutiny. Lead a fucking mutiny and be like, we're taking the boat now.
Little pirate witch queen. I love her. I hope so. Oh, my God.
These are thoughts.
Was yeah. I actually accidentally right? I love this.
Well,
for me.
No, you were always going to be right about her taking a boat, but now she's going to be taking a boat. Maybe.
Could you go back and just say again real quick the you were always going to be right
You were always going to be right.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying this. Finally, someone is listening. All right. Let's get back to Bravo's history real quick. We could have me being right any day. Okay, any day. No, but really, though, she could steal a boat. The nine free cities are the daughters of Valyria that was. The kindly man taught her. But Braavos is the bastard child, me, who ran away from home. We are a mongrel folk, the son of slaves and whores and thieves. Our forebears came from 50 lands to this place of refuge to escape the dragon lords who enslaved them. 50 gods came with them, but there is one god all of them shared in common. Him of many faces.
Yeah, and then he tells her that all men must die and return to him of many faces. And I don't know, I just want to know, like, what do the faceless men think about resurrection? I just want to know, because they tell Arya, they're like, yeah, I mean, you don't know anywhere that the people live forever, right? And I'm like, I guess not, as far as I know, right. But I don't know. Like, what if that's what's going on in Nishai? I don't know. I also am curious what Arya's going to think about when she sees Lady Stoneheart, right? Like, what is that going to mean to her on this not only very personal level, as she's like, oh my god, my mom's a zombie, but also, like, on that religious level, depending on how much she, like, how deeply she will internalize those beliefs of, like, yeah, everyone's supposed to die. Like, is she going to look at her mom and really strongly feel, like, abomination?
Abomination. No, really, though, I do think that's part of it. What she's learning in Braavos is administering the gift. Right. And is the gift mercy? Is it murder? That's up for debate. That's the big debate for her, for the Bravosi, for the kindly man, all these people to talk about in their chapters. But for us, the reader, to think about, like, I do think that's an important part of her journey, right? Learning mercy starts there in the first book, really, even her first kill, and understanding the difference between the two. And what she's learning here with the faceless men, I'm sure that she'll look at her mother and realize what, to your point, abomination. This is, no one should live this way.
Yeah, pretty much.
No one should be forced to live like that, man. It's not a real life.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, whatever is going on there.
It's a half-life, you know, you're not living a real... You're living a ghost, Jesus. A shell, a zombie.
No, a zombie. A ghost is a different supernatural phenomenon.
Oh my god.
So, Arya shares her learnings of the day. Blind Becco's secret hot sauce ingredient, which I too want to know. Give us the secrets. They shouldn't have chili peppers yet, by the way. Just throwing it out there, but they might from Dorne. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The Blue Lanterns, Mummers, plan to perform the Lord of Woeful Countenance, while the Mummers at the ship plan to answer it with 7 drunken oarsmen. When's the release date? And a bookseller, Lotho Lornell, sleeps in the house of tradesmen. And Captain Moreto Prestain, whenever the Honorable Tradesman Captain is away on a voyage and moves out whenever the vixen comes home.
Interesting, right? So that implies that someone's fucking someone, mm-hmm. is what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just me. I feel like, flesh. Do we even get like a reveal on that later? Does he ever come back? I don't know. I think we only get him in Cat of the Canals, but he deals old books and scrolls. So maybe he could come back up.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Maybe he could come back up.
He really actually could. That could be cool.
Yeah. I feel like these are definitely characters coming in TWoW. Especially because the Prestanes are, like, wealthy and powerful, mm-hmm. right, in the story. And they have tall towers, it sounds like, right? The tall towers of the mighty.
Yeah.
The green, the golden thunderbolt turning on its spire on the Sea Lord's Palace. Like, all these places, they have tall and grand towers, so... Very interesting. I'd like to see what comes back from them, if anything else comes back up. And I feel like there's a hint at it in Mercy, actually, now that I say that. So we'll come back to that.
Yeah. And I mean, it could be interesting. Like, it wouldn't be surprising if Tyrion, you know, was like, I want to swing by the bookstore. Or, I mean, who knows? Maybe like, Arya steals this fucking guy's boat.
I mean, it seems unrealistic that Daenerys herself would end up back here, obviously, like, with all the places in the Free Cities she should / won't hit already, but it makes me wonder if her books, if that's where they go to ask questions about her books or something.
Yeah.
You know, those books she got for her wedding gift.
Yeah. No.
Thoughts. The kindly man asks Arya who she is. She tells him no one, and he says, "You lie," and bids her to sleep and serve on the morrow. Arya serves the many-faced god 3 days every month, washing the dead, tending to the household tasks. The other days she spends in Ragman's Harbor, with the strange smells and the noise and all of the inbound ships. Shout out to our friends at Ragman's Harbor, a new podcast out there. Go check it out. I really love this harbor, and I love this journey through it. I totally understand how George was like, I could write Arya novellas for years because it's just so rich and colorful. And it also shows Arya with all the weirdos and all the normies and, like, the people on the streets, even more so than, you know, A Storm of Swords was kind of like the book for Arya's on the ground in the Riverlands and Clash, Arya's on the ground in the Riverlands. But honestly, there's something interesting about her falling in with the mummers, the sex workers, the queers, the traders and sailors, that she's able to fit in with all these different people, learn their secrets, chat with them, whether she's spying or not, fit in with them and make friends with them. And even about class consciousness, right, of her hanging out with the different classes of workers in Braavos on all levels. There's such a great opportunity in real life of, like, meeting people from different walks of life, and you learn so much from being engaged with these kind of groups of people that maybe are nothing like you or your interests. I think that's, like, Arya finessing some of what she's learned in the Riverlands now in Braavos, right? As she's matured to, you know, her people skills, she's finessing all this.
Yeah, I really love that, and she is learning all those. It's always been, I think, a big part of Arya's story of kind of that idea of just acceptance, right? And understanding where people are coming from, no matter mm-hmm. where they're coming from, which I think also makes her a great, again, complement to Bran's storyline. Like, we see her even doing that. Like, that's, I think, part of what's important about her journey with Sandor, right? She's like, dang, we were really at odds, but now I think I kind of get it. And this is also just a great evolution of, you know, her... Now she knows what a brothel is. Now she really right. knows, as opposed to, like, when she was at the peach.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, she's even just in one book, she's a completely different character now.
Yeah, she's like, oh, that's a brothel. And now she, like, knows literally, about, like, the best ones, you know. She's got recommendations mm-hmm. if you asked her, and she's got her faves. I also love the symbolism of how Arya serves on the 3 days when there is no moon. You know, the days that the moon is there in the sky, it's when... I feel like I don't have to explain to all of you how the moon works, but, like, the moon changes every night, everyone. Like, it has a changing face. And so on the days that the moon is in the sky, Arya... The moon is always there, obviously, but, like, on the days that you can see the moon, Arya has a face that is shown to the world, right? Or has to play the role. It's on the days when there is no face, and therefore no one, no moon, that they all gotta serve. That's Ooh. It.
Yeah, the moon feels big in this too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very important, I feel like.
The magic moon's pretty big.
Like the big orb in the sky.
It's true.
You know?
The moon is big. I'm like, I don't know. Do I explain to them how the moon works? Aria starts to learn also these trade tongues and interacts with sailors from all over the world and all sorts of social graces to what Chloe was saying. You know, she's really getting to learn a lot. What?
It's just, this is like your favorite line in all of A Song of Ice and Fire. I feel like you love this passage so much. I thought of you as soon as I read it.
I
was like,
oh.
I mean, you talk about it a lot. Once in a while, you always say the camel cunt line is the best. I love when she says camel
I've
cunt.
I've never said that. I didn't even remember her ever saying that until this was rereading this.
You definitely have said before you like it.
A long, long time ago, and I must have also thrown that out. That must have gotten caught in some filter when I needed to clear up some memory space on my head. My meat computer.
Couple gigabytes here, couple gigabytes there.
Yeah, like the time I accidentally deleted my audio and somehow magically recovered it on Google Drive. That was bad.
Bad memories. It's been 6 great years. So we have a passage, a famous passage. Those sailors were the ones Kat liked best. Any man who bothered her was apt to see the fig or hear himself described as an ass's pizzle or a camel's cunt. Maybe I never saw a camel, she would tell them, but I know a camel's cunt when I smell one. Once in a great while, that would make somebody angry, but when it did, she had her finger knife. She kept it very sharp and knew how to use it, too. Uh-oh.
Icon. I love the trope of child cursing around. I don't know. So funny. Imagine. Maybe I never saw a camel, but I know a camel's coming. Like, she doesn't even know what that means, and she's out here saying that. It's so funny.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is a pizzle? I don't know. Anyway, we have this little thing here, too, about the finger knife. Kind of fun. Makes me think, you know, here's George really, really digging into that D&D rogue class thing. Not that D&D, Dungeons & Dragons rogue class. And I don't know. I'm like, thinking about the finger knife, for some reason, makes me think about the finger dance. None of these things are that connected. And then from there, like, little finger. And I don't know. I almost feel like something's happening here, but maybe not quite yet. The fingers.
I'm thinking that the pizzle must be penis.
It must be. It must be. But also, yeah, like, fingers and stuff. Especially because, like, that guy's fingers that don't move are coming up in a sec. Oh, and Davos.
It is definitely a penis, I have found out.
Oh, okay. We're here. We're still here on the pizzle.
Yeah. Something with fingers, though, is coming up, right, in her plot. Interesting.
Yeah. Just more ties to Elaine Stone.
She befriends a bunch of people on the wharves and spends her time learning from them how to catch eels, perform magic tricks, and make up body farces.
And I don't know, I like how there's a line here. It's described as like people telling her true tales about Braavos, but lies about their lives. And I thought that was really interesting that people are so open about this history that they've all kind of agreed upon. It's easier. And even then, like, people don't always agree on different interpretations of what happens in history. But here people, that's how she's seeing it. They're giving her facts about how Braavos came to be and what it's like living here. And the lies about their lives part stands out in terms of what is going on here in A Song of Ice and Fire. And having this POV structure where you really get to see into the minds of the characters. I remember a friend of mine who's, like, a therapist speaking with him once of, like, about delusions, right? Things like schizophrenia. And he's like, everyone lives with delusions, right? He's like, everybody has delusions. It's just how intrusive they are to your life. And in that context, it makes me think of, like, Arya is also living with lies herself, right? She's got lies about her own life. And sometimes people don't even know that they're lying to themselves. Like, Arya telling herself all the time, she's like, I'm not afraid. But her dreams tell us different. She is afraid. She's terrified. She's got nowhere to go. She's got no home. She's got no friends. I mean, she has friends. They just needed jobs. And yeah, and also, I don't know. She's learning about people's magic tricks. She's watching like street magic stuff. It's cute. And she's like, that's not magic when he pretends to swallow the mouse. And I strongly believe Arya's like, you're full of shit, because I think that if dared, Arya could do it. Arya could swallow the whole mouse. She would make it happen. You know, eat the worm, eat the mouse. And that's what I have for you in Cat of the Canals.
Oh my God. She probably would try it if she was dared. She was like the kid that would eat. You know how at lunch, like some people in a cafeteria setting as a student might put all their gross stuff together
Yes,
and
that happens
like
all the
make a
time.
thing?
Yes.
Yeah,
Is it
I've
even
seen it on TV.
lunchtime?
I've seen it in real life. Like,
Yeah.
of course the kids are gonna put their gross shit together. Like, Arya would drink the chocolate milk with all the gross shit in
Yeah,
it. Like, she would do it on a dare,
she
yeah.
would absolutely do it. Or like there was a kid,
Ugh.
what were we doing? We were dissecting something in
Ugh.
class. I want to say it was the
Oh,
fetal
I got out
pig,
of
but I don't
that.
remember what it was. It might have been frogs, who knows. But there was something in the formaldehyde, and this kid was like, who's gonna dare me to eat it? Who's gonna give me money to eat it? And we were like, no. And I think he wanted to do it, but someone stopped him because it's fucking preserved in formaldehyde. I think
Jesus
the teacher caught
Christ.
me and was like, don't do it.
I didn't have to dissect shit. I got out of all that.
I'm
I don't
not
even
against
remember
it.
how. It's just not for me.
Okay. Here's a new insight about me that I realized watching a show about, I don't know, doctors, my like this K-drama, it finished this week. I don't think I could be a surgeon. I would faint seeing that blood. But
Oh
I don't
yeah,
know.
no way.
There wasn't that much blood from what I remember when it came to like dissecting stuff for school, because it's like dead and preserved.
Dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, the blood
I can
is
do
hard
that.
for me, but
Yeah.
yeah, I don't
I'm
know.
just like, the blood should be inside you. I faint when they draw blood for me if I haven't had anything. My blood
Same.
pressure drops too much. I'm like, it
Yeah,
should
they
be
also have to
inside
use like
me.
the butterfly needle on
Oh,
me because like
really?
my veins will collapse because I'm just so delicate. Yeah.
Oh,
When you think of me, everyone listening, I hope you think of me as such a delicate
she
flower.
is. She is. She's the most beautiful, delicate flower blooming now here in the springtime. It is April.
Happy Aerie season. Cat peddles her seafood at all of the ports, but she always finds herself coming back to Ragman's Harbor. Cats start to follow her mood and her seafood. Sometimes a dozen would be trailing after her by day's end. She'd throw an oyster back to see which cat wins the prize. Oh, that's not nice. And often the prize, though, would go to runty small cats. Like me, she'd tell herself. Her favorite, though, is a scrawny old tom with a chewed ear that reminds her of a cat she chased in Westeros. Or wait, she didn't chase that cat. She's Cat of the Canals, not Arya.
I just had a random thought because of the basilisk's blood thing that happens later this chapter, and her learning about it and tying it back to Wheeze and the dogs thing. And we've been talking about dogs and Ramsay. This isn't going to be about dogs, it's going to be about cats. But is it possible? I'm sure someone else has thought of this already, and not just me, for her to do some sort of basilisk's blood thing using
To Ramsay,
cats.
cat,
Not
or to
to
with
Ramsay
cats.
in
Oh,
necessarily, but with cats, especially if she's so good at like, I
well,
guess
let's
getting
come
them.
back to
I don't know.
that.
It's just a random thought.
Let's come back to that because I think there's something in it, and I think we'll be able to talk about that this episode.
Okay.
Still,
It's a weird throwaway thought that just suddenly came to me.
I also want to add the scrawny old Tom with a chewed ear. Oh, like
Aww.
Sandor.
Ah.
I didn't think of that till now either. I'm like, oh, right, Sandor, scrawny, chewed ear. He's not
Also,
scrawny, but.
I guess it was kind of an ear, right? Also, with Brienne. It's more of her cheek.
Yes.
So, new ships come every day, bringing new men. This time, the Brazen Monkey, different animal. The Ebonese Whaler, two Pintoshi Cogs, a green galley from Old Volantis. They're all parked. Cat of the Canals attempts to sell them some grub, with middling results, but a guy from the Volantis ship eats a dozen oysters, telling her that Lycian pirates led by Salador San attacked them in the Stepstone. Six oysters, that's nothing. Another sailor asks what there is for entertainment, and Arya recommends some of the mummers, or you can like go to see some eel fights, which is interesting. I'm curious. Or the moon pool, where the bravos duel at night, but what he really
Ooh.
wanted to know was, where are the women? She recommends Mary at the Happy Port. But the young sailor, Wat, I'm sorry, I can't get over the names of Watt.
Watt.
Watt really wants to know
Watt.
How to find the courtesans. The shipmates think that he's crazy for this one. He's like, courtesans are expensive. They are out of your pay grade. They are for lords, not for sailors.
Yes, we get a passage of the courtesans of Braavos. They were famed across the world. Singers sang of them. Goldsmiths and jewelers showered them with gifts. Craftsmen begged for the honor of their custom. Merchant princes paid royal ransoms to have them on their arms at balls and feasts and mummer shows, and Braavos slew each other in their names.
They're influencers. Gifts. I don't know. It just came to mind because I was editing an episode where we were talking about Get Ready With Me videos. Arya tells them about her... Oh, just like Beric. Arya tells them about her run-in with the Black Pearl, who's descended from dragons. They say the first Black Pearl was rumored to be a pirate queen, and her taste for hot sauce on oysters, the current one, the current Black Pearl, which is a professional move, as Chloe points out, and... Arya thinks, she's like, I think I gotta start carrying hot sauce with me when I sell oysters because, like, what's his name? Becco does it, and he gets way more business. And I'm like, yeah, Arya, you should carry hot sauce.
She's a great employee in this chapter. Like, she's very constructive. She figures out what other people are doing. She comes back. She's like, listen, kindly man. Listen, Brusco. Here's what we're gonna do.
Here's what the competition's doing.
Action plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, whether I work for you, something's got to change in this city.
Yeah, and it's hot sauce.
The people demand the hot sauce, man. When Arya had told the kindly man she met the Black Pearl, he says, oh, her mother was named Belinera, but the first Black Pearl was a Belagir. So a little history there. I'm sure we'll come up to that in Braavos for a bit because we know some of those roots and where they lay, and you might even bring up some of those roots today. But Kat knows that the men don't care about any of that history, though, and instead she goes, so what's up with the war in Westeros? And the men, who are from Goldtown, tell her, well, the little lord has kept us out of the war just like his mother did. Except, as they tell her, the Lady Lysa is dead. Murdered by her own singer. Farther down the dock, Taganero sits next to Casso, the king of seals. They buy mussels from her and try to poach her from Brusco, saying, I'll pay you far more and you won't smell like fish.
Yeah, we have a line here of, he had been looking for a new partner ever since the drunken daughter put her knife through little Narbo's hand, and brief thing, the lack of finger discussion makes me think of the random other throwaway thought that I had about Theon teaching Arya how to use a bow and arrow. I'm like, dang, what if that does hold water? But also, just in general, like, the finger is not really working here. It makes me think of other, like, characters in these two books, such as Theon and Jaime, and, you know, this guy's got to get a new livelihood now, right? And this whole idea of you got to start a new job, you got to start afresh with a new life thing. Just what Theon and Jaime got to do. Jaime keeps trying to make his current job work, though.
Makes me think of Kat and Jon's hands, too. And the stiffness in them post-attack for Kat and then Jon, of course. I don't know how you couldn't think of that, since every other thought is that he's flexing his hand. Just kidding. Except I'm telling the truth. Jon flexed his hand.
Jon flexed. Oh, no, Alistair Thorne.
Oh, my God. I just don't know. I'm like, Arya, are you going to drive the boat or are you going to learn to bow and arrow?
I feel like, okay, I think she could steal a boat now. It didn't even take her that long, you know, to learn how to ride a boat. It might not even take her that long to shoot a bow and arrow. She doesn't have to be like, I mean, how good she got to be? Like, she's got great aim, great dex right now. Mm-hmm. She's got good aim when she threw that one knife at the tickler.
The apple.
Yeah, she's getting better. Like, she's got good hand-eye coordination as far as we can tell. Like, maybe it won't be that hard. She's just going to be, like, a prodigy at it, just like everything else.
Well, and through the power of George R. R. Martin's pen / word star, anything's possible is
honestly
what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Definitely thought there was something interesting in Narbo, the boy, also has a dream of getting out now that his hand is no longer really working for his job, and now that he's given his body to capitalism and Braavos. He has a dream of working on a boat, just like Arya. So I'm like, oh, he has a dream. He could get out. Arya, you too. You too.
Yeah, that's actually true. His is more like, what, rowing, though, as opposed to Arya's, which is like, I'm going to own the boat. Well, not own it. Sorry, I'm going to take. I will take the boat.
I can't believe she's going to steal a boat. I can't believe this is going to happen. Elliana called it. I called it, and then Elliana called it. I don't know.
Together.
George, get writing.
Together, we have come to the new heist movie. Oceans. Oh, it's not Oceans, but it's like the sea, the narrow sea. Mm-hmm. 11. Oh, she's 11.
My God.
Or 12.
Oh, she's 11.
Oh, my God.
Oh, she's 11.
Oh, she's 11. That's the new movie.
There's something really interesting about class in Braavos and how every street Arya goes on has the same people working the same jobs, but like different levels, right? You have a little discussion here of sex workers who are from a lesser district, and people automatically in conversation treat them like they're less. And you see that they have to struggle and that people exploit their bodies. And like one of these men says, oh, well, you know, so-and-so, I hear they murder people there that visit there. And I'm like, okay, well, it's probably that that guy assaulted that person and they were protecting themselves. But glossing over that, that's the narrative, right? That's the narrative that's put around. But then on the other hand, you're told, oh, but the lovely courtesans on their rafts who sell the fantasy, right? Yep. They sell the fantasy to everyone of this is what you could have. And I'm the fantasy on your arm. Like, it's very interesting that these are two different classes of workers in this city and they're being treated that way. And it's not just for the sex workers. It's with the bodyguards too, right? In Braavos, you have the Braavos, the cut purses. You have people that pickpocket for a living and then stabby stabby when it gets crazy, like Narbo. Assassins are the higher class, right? You have high paid assassins out of the Black and White Temple, the House of Black and White going on. And they're regarded as like the top class level. You need a shit ton of money to pay them for that. But is it really that different from the guy on the street that's walking around stabbing someone for someone else? Like, it's not different. The only difference is that one is regarded as higher class and the other is regarded as not because of location. I don't know. It's interesting. Like, Arya could go work for Taganero, who basically is the mob, right? He's the mob of Braavos is what it sounds like. He's like, ah, oh, you wouldn't smell like fish if you came and worked for me and, you know, kept your pocket knife there, your finger knife sharp. Matilda style, for those of you that have watched Leon, the professional. She could just make far more money doing that probably with dirty money than working for Brusco, which obviously that's not why she's there. She's there for the secrets. But the job, her working for Brusco, like that's looked at as lesser too, right? She's being looked at. He's like, ah, you could be working for me, kid. You could come work for me and be the best person on the street to pickpocket and stab around. I don't know. It's interesting that you have such ritualism involved with some of the what's looked at as the higher class, higher risk jobs, and just that class dividing line. And, you know, both of these scenarios show people that survive, right, in this city. They survive and they make money to live. Interesting to watch how Braavos is kind of capitalized on. It's like a world of dreams, but you have to make your dream lest you land in a nightmare. And I don't know. There's also something that's like, you know, at least some of these lower class assassins steal money after the person's dead, right? Or steal money from them while they're alive, sure, but the rich steal it from them while they're alive all the time. Like, at least some of the lower class cut purses have honor. You know, it's an honest trade. Honest trade. The rich are just getting duped by the rich, and the rich are duping the poor, too. So I don't know. It's interesting.
It is interesting, and you can kind of see that a little even in the story of how the waif came to be there at the house. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of speaks to it as well when you're talking about, like, the rich doing it while alive. And I guess part of it is, like, it's just buying the illusion of legitimacy, right? Because the House of Black and White, I mean, I guess at the very least, like, you pay for everything. It's just, like, what are you willing to ascertain it? Because, like, my understanding is no matter what, they're going to get the job done. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No one will necessarily know it was you, except for them. But also, like, they're embedded into the system. You're buying, I guess, yeah, legitimacy. Because, I mean, the bank. They have a whole bank. Like, how do you think banks fucking work, everyone?
Well, and it's like the Godfather series, right? So in the beginning of the Godfather, for those listening that need to know, The whole idea is that, like, the mob is trying to become legitimate, right? How do I take this and make it legitimate for the next generation? How do I make it so my son, his sons, have a legitimate job? Like, the whole point is there's a character that ends up, you know, trying to get into government so that he can help legitimize this business and have that. And so it's interesting to watch those trials and tribulations across the three movies, but it's like that, you know, like the mob was a very big thing. It's still a thing, but the government's kind of the mob too, is what I'm trying to tell you. They looked at something and capitalized on it, right? A lot of the free cities have done this. And you even look at, even in Westeros, Jane, right? Jane was trafficked by Cersei and Littlefinger and then trained to pleasure. To pleasure it's people, to give them so pleasure. Yeah. The Lyseni and the Seven Sighs, right? And being trained in the Seven Sighs is something that's looked at as exotic and luxurious. And sometimes it probably is, and sometimes it probably isn't. It can be both things. And it's interesting. I'm about to start on Fever Dream. I'm not in it yet. I've been waiting. Nauticast, Emmett over at Nauticast, is just finishing up the book for patrons soon, I believe. So check that out if you're into that. He's been doing episodes monthly, bi-weekly, different episodes on Star Wars and Fever Dream. But George writes about Fever Dream actually kind of akin to Braavos in a couple ways. Like, A, the color, the class, the dimension, like all the noise you can like feel and the culture you can feel on the streets. And just like, it's New Orleans, you know? But then you can also tell that he would love to have stayed there. Like, George could write 80 years of the novel in New Orleans in Fever Dream. Like, he just like Braavos, yeah, he would love to just keep writing about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's bright. It's loud. Something's always happening. And there's this passage that I was shared by my roommate. My roommate shared me this passage from Fever Dream of a sex worker that is upstairs in New Orleans. And you get kind of this scene where the next day, someone finds, like, the man that had gone upstairs, this woman, dead in the hall, I believe. And one of the characters says, "What the hell happened to him?" And the other guy says, "Bridget probably woke up, clubbed him, and took his money. She's a real darling. I believe she's killed at least four men with that little knife of hers. She carves notches on that heart." He grimaced. "When it comes to bloodshed, Abner, my people have very little to teach your own." So interesting that George goes into a little more detail in some of his other works. Obviously not as much here.
Yeah.
Arya's POV.
I mean, realizing now there's no sort of like really gold cloaks or law enforcement, though, now that I think about it in Braavos, because something different that you have between Braavos with their class, right, and the Lysine pillow houses is that the people in Braavos are at least not trafficked. They are not sex slaves. They are sex workers. And you can see it in the way that they act. There, you can see it in the way that Arya describes the dynamics in each of those houses, and really just shows that they have life, right? As opposed to the sex slaves that Tyrion encounters in his travels. And so I think that's interesting. But also, like, I'm like, what happens when people die? What does happen? Because, like, the Braavos are just killing each other out by the moon pool, having their duels, right? What happens there? No one's mad when someone at the pillow house, not the pillow house, at these brothels in Braavos kills someone, really. I'm just like, yeah, that just happened. So I am kind of interested and curious now. I'm like, how does this work in Braavos?
And I think we start to see a little more of the upper echelon of city management and private security kind of appear in The Winds of Winter Mercy, right?
Yeah.
And not to spoil, but we see a little bit more of the outline of how that works. So, but I think The Winds of Winter, we're going to see at least a little bit more of that. But it is kind of like private security free-for-all.
Yeah, I think people are kind of, amongst the Braavosi themselves, there seems to be like a lot of, I think, cultural trust within it. They have a strong sense of identity, cultural identity within Braavos. But it's also interesting because they have people from all over come there too.
Mm-hmm.
Fun place. Another fun place is Happyport, where Arya reaches and the mummers come down for oysters, telling her about their seven drunken oarsmen performance and how they're down two players. She tells them to try to get little Narbo, and they send her on her way to find Mary and the girl for oysters. Mary sits with her eyes shut, listening to Darian play his wood harp, and Lana, who has fine golden hair, age 14, always asks for the singer to play stupid love songs. What's wrong with that?
Also, What's obviously, there's rumors of who she could be, right? Yeah. Is she Tyrion's child or someone's child? I don't know. I don't know if that matters.
Same.
It could be another fun little wink nod, whatever, from George, but definitely seems to be a Lannister bastard, possibly.
It does feel a little that way, but...
A little hill. I mean, Lana Hill.
As we feel about Robert Arryn, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. I have no strong feelings.
Darren, of course, is a crow, but he's been transformed into a peacock. The only black item left on him is his boots. He is a man of the Night's Watch, she thought, as he sang about some stupid lady throwing herself off some stupid tower because her stupid prince was dead. The lady should go kill the ones who killed her prince, and the singer should be on the wall.
Slipping that in there, Arya.
I really do think this is that one song that she hears that I'm 99% sure sounds like it's about Ashara Dane and potentially her dad, or maybe not. It could also be, I guess, Helaena would be another idea.
Oh, yeah. And the
or Jahera,
the kid.
But that doesn't count.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I think it's probably about, I guess, they're supposed to be about Ashara, just because I don't know if George gardened that far yet with Helaena, mm-hmm. but also it came up in Arya's story, so I'm like, Arya, are you like, is she like me, and she's just not good at remembering the lyrics of songs? Like, I can listen to a song and know what it's about, you know, like people love to talk about Pumped Up Kicks. I know obviously what it's about before anyone else, because I had listened to it before it got big. But anyways, I do think it's really interesting how everyone in all of these stories, when they reach Braavos, just kind of gets turned into a prince, right? Earlier we heard about the Black Pearl, and we're like, yeah, you know, the Black Pearl from back then, her lover was a Westerosi prince. And I'm like, he was a king, right? This was Aegon IV. So how does he go from being a king to a prince? But here in the story, if this is about Ashara, which I'm pretty sure it is, Ned, who is a lord in the story that everyone in Westeros knows, and this rumor that everyone in Westeros has peddled, goes from a lord to a prince. Everyone just gets turned into a fucking prince. Oh.
Because they go to Braavos and they're no longer in Westeros, maybe?
I guess it just makes, are they like, it's a better story when they're a prince, but also mm-hmm. now that I'm thinking about it and everyone just gets turned into a prince, it makes me think of Aemon being like, we were looking for a prince when we should have been looking for a princess. I don't think that actually ties into here, but I just think it's interesting.
It makes me think of, you know, like Dany and Viserys as well, going to Braavos, or Rhaenyra selling her crown in Braavos and making her no longer a queen. In a way, because she sold her queen crown, her father's crown.
Is that all it takes to make someone? I mean, I guess that's the question that the story's asking. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's a very transformative city where you can become anyone, it turns out, is what I'm saying.
Oh, you actually literally could. That is Arya's storyline. If you give enough
the
of your
sailors,
soul.
Oh, God. Oh, God. If you give enough of your body, enough of your soul, here it comes. You could be anyone, kid. When Darren first arrived, Arya had asked him to take her back to Eastwatch, but he declared, I'm never going back, and the women in Braavos are far too beautiful, which he tells that to every woman, by the way, each and every one of them separately that she had heard of. She's like, oh yes, he says this to every girl individually. Kat wishes she had been there the night the fat one, quote unquote, hit him, thinking about it, when the sailor's wife suddenly appears to praise Darren's good looks and his music. She thinks, he is fair of face and foul of heart, thought Arya, but she did not say it. You're goddamn right, Arya, you're a good judge of character in that, I'll tell you this much. Fair of face and foul of heart, all the good ones are, or the bad ones. I do love this resentment, though.
She should be the one writing bars. I'm in good one. Yeah.
She could be a poet, too, on top of all
this. I know, right? She's so talented.
That's our girl. I do love how angry she gets. It's like very resentful. It's almost like watching someone be a false idol or pray to a false idol, right? It builds about him that even though she doesn't really know how Jon has been at the Night's Watch whatsoever, like just putting that out there, she does not know what's happened at the Night's Watch and what Jon is up to. But she has this idea in her head, this ideal that Jon is being put against, that he's a good man who chose to go to the Night's Watch. He was a boy that was like, I have no other options. Fuck it. And he's doing his duty at the wall, and Darren's a bad man who has abandoned the watch, and she feels that there's inequality in the situations, which there is. But hysterically, at this moment, if you glue the books back together, John is currently tossing around the idea of abandoning his post and getting the watch into a battle because of, drumroll please, Arya. Because of Arya, because of the memory of the little sister that he loved, Arya. He is currently thinking of abandoning his watch and deserting.
Yeah, so true. It is Arya's fault.
It's all her fault. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I love that. I love how you've tied these together. And you're right. She really doesn't know how it's all been going. And as you said, the inequality of the situations, right? Tyrion's a bad man who has abandoned the watch. And I know we discussed this much more in depth during the Samwell chapters of, I mean, like, it was super shitty that he didn't help out when Maester Aemon was dying and sick. But also it was super shitty that he fucking got sent there at all. And this is very much Arya's black and white thinking, right? And her not really being able to see the circumstances behind either Jon or Darian, and she's just like, well, you joined an order, Darian. You can't just abandon it. The penalty for deserting the Night's Watch is death. And I'm like, interesting, Arya. I'm not sure if you know this, but you've also joined an order. And what's going to happen if you're like, I don't think I want to do it anymore. I think I would like to have a different life and job than the one in this order that I have joined.
Maybe I will not give my body, blood, soul, life to this order.
I don't know. I think she's going to get to a point where it's too late. I don't know if they have oaths. I wonder how the oaths work.
The oaths are like, don't tell anybody and change your face a lot.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know how it's going to work out.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of like idolatry about, you know, the Kingsguard and the Night's Watch and some of that like, you know, that propaganda that you're born with in Westeros. When you come to a new place, you're looking at it as if they were the best in the world, but yet.
Yeah, they're.
It's all she knows.
Yeah, they're not the best. I mean, Jon is a good man. He is a good man.
Yeah. He's a good boy, yes.
I'm just doing a bad job.
Yeah, because he's a boy. He's not.
Yeah, that's true. He's just a boy.
He's just a boy.
Well,
so
the sailor's wife, who is not just a boy, has a specialty. She would only sleep with men who married her. And Darian had once wed her. Damn it, Darian. What are you doing?
Sometimes, hey, commitment's important.
He's like, all these vows, they make you swear and swear. The happy port sometimes has like 3 to 4 jolly, loud, drunken weddings each night, performed by a wine-soaked red priest or septon. And sometimes they're like, oh my god, we can't find any religious leaders right now. We're just going to get a mummer. And then we have this line of, whenever Kat happened by with her barrow, the sailor's wife would insist that her new husband buy some oysters to stiffen him for the consummation. She was good that way and quick to laugh as well. But Kat thought that there was something sad about her, too.
Oh, I love that because, especially since we've kind of talked about, you know, they're all these people are working on similar levels, whether they live on one street or another in many ways, right? They have the same jobs. Kat sees tons of people every day, and she can see sadness from some of her new skills, right? I mean, hopefully she could see sadness before, but now especially she's seeing more of what's inside. And also I love that the sailor's wife here is you know, kind of stimulating Arya's economy.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Exactly. She's
that's feminism.
Yeah. No, but actually though, she's like, all right, we're bringing in business for all these people.
That's capitalism, mm-hmm. Feminism. Feminist capitalism.
Yeah.
We love Braavos.
The sailor's wife visits Isle of Gods on certain days to pray for her lost husband, and her fellow sex workers think that it's probably for the best that her love never returns because we're pretty sure he's dead. Like, oh, interesting.
That's so sad.
Interesting that you don't think, yeah.
Also that, like, now she gets married if somebody's going to bang her. If somebody is going to sleep with her, she gets married. She makes them marry her as her shtick, but she's truly grieving the loss of someone she loved.
Yeah, I thought we were going with, they're like, it's probably for the best that he doesn't come back because he's dead, and the implication that he would be a zombie. And I'm like, oh, tying in, of course, with Lady Stoneheart stuff.
Oh, I'm over here shedding a tear for love. as Sansa would do, and you're like, zombies.
It's her love about, like, her zombie mom. That's sad, too.
That is sad, too. Daeron and Lyanna spend time together at Happyport. Kat leaves with a purse of coins, and Daeron leaves to sing at the Inn of the Green Eel, so they begin to walk together. Daeron starts to boast about his future success and ambitions, and he mentions his brother, who was once supposed to sail on the Lady Ushinora. They all were, by Lord Snow's command, actually. "I told Sam, leave the old man, but the fat fool would not," he says. Kat nods. She's like, "I don't know who the old man is. I kind of know who the fat fool is, but no clue who the old man is. Don't know Ushinora." Doesn't say anything about Lord Snow, believe it or not. Interesting. Doesn't make any face. She's learning.
Yeah.
Instead, she just says, "Just so." When she returns to Brusco, she has a new pair of good black boots. Too small for Brusco.
"The moon will be black tonight," she reminded him.
"Best you pray, then." Brusco shoved the boots aside and poured out the coins to count them. "Valar Dohaeris."
"Valar Morghulis," she thought.
All right, nothing's cooler than that cut, though, right? Like that sudden cut from Arya not, or Kat nods saying, "Just so." And then, anyways, back to Brusco. Blink and you miss it, right? If you're not immersed in the chapter, you wouldn't realize she murdered Daeron's annoying bitch ass, but the signs are all there. Nodding, listening to him rant because she knows she's going to murder him anyways soon. So real. And then the black boots she's been eyeballing as the only black things on his body as a Night's Watchman being returned to Brusco for a little coin. That is a great cut. Cleverly written. Bravo, C. George.
Yeah, and also is it like because it's not Kat doing it, it's Arya. It is Arya. It's a different person, so we don't see it happen.
Now we're thinking.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, we're still going to keep calling her Arya, because Arya returns to the House of Black and White, changing into clean clothes and getting food from the kitchens. She helps the Waif prepare potions, including sweet sleep. She's also shown the Tears of Lys, basilisk blood paste, which causes madness when eaten.
Love the sweet sleep mention, since that's in Elaine's plot. Elaine. In the Elaine to the Cat. The Elaine of the Cat Elaine. That's going on with Elaine, but also the Tears of Lys, also the Elaine reveal that just happened. And the basilisk blood paste, which you brought up, right? We got the basilisk blood reveal with Jack and Weiss and the dogs. And I don't know if it'll necessarily come back with Arya's plot, but I do love, I know there's like a really extreme theory out there of like the cats, Tommen's three cats, will get fed the basilisk blood and maybe scratch him up and kill him, which is interesting.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I was just thinking, I forgot that is a thing, that was a theory. I was just thinking, could Arya just do something fun with it? There was no end goal, just Arya and cats hanging out, doing murder.
I do think, though, like, it's going to happen in King's Landing, because all the cards are falling into place, right? You have Basilisk Blood Paste is in Pycelle's Grand Maester, you know, pill cabinet. So you have that scene there when Tyrion goes in for the poison. Mm-hmm. And then you have Tyene as a Septa and able to get into places that maybe others might not be, come the Winds of Winter, right? She's going to King's Landing and she's going to be a Septa. And then it comes back up in Cersei's plot, something about Maggie the Frog's tent has an iron brazier shaped like a basilisk head.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. And she actually does know how to make poison, even if she doesn't access that. She's pretty knowledgeable about it, so interesting.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's going to come back, like, especially with those, like, because of where it's been mentioned and because of where the pieces are falling, like, because Tyene is going to King's Landing, it just makes me think it's connected since she's good with poisons.
You're right. Yeah, I forgot about that theory. Ugh,
but
so
especially,
sad.
Like, the Maggie the Frog tent, like, that freaks me out. The basilisk head, what a cool brazier. I want that.
Yeah, but now I'm just sad about, I don't know, that sounds like a terrible way to go.
It's unfair. It's really sad. I'm like, not the two cute ones. Not the good ones.
I know, right?
Joffrey didn't deserve to die either, for what it's worth.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. Capital punishment, you know. It's a whole thing.
It's not my thing. Yeah, it's not my jam. It's for the big wigs that get paid a lot more to think about, not me.
Yeah, I'm just a podcast. I'm just on a podcast. I'm just a girl.
We're just girls,
Gone
Canon.
Please don't look for me for your, like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. You want to hear lawyer takes? Go listen to the lawyers, not us. Go listen to Learned Hands. They know.
They are learned.
They have opinions.
They are learned and they are hands. I am... I'm gone. On. I'm girl gone.
So. We're gone. Fuck.
Arya asks if the basilisk paste, speaking of animals, would work on dogs, and the waif confirms that it's going to work on any animal with warm blood. So not on... Wait, what is what constitutes as warm blood? Like, because, okay, I'm sorry. Would it work on dragons?
Alive?
Well, no, because, like, would it work on... Oh, I thought this was, like, this meant mammalian.
Oh.
Because I'm like, are dragons reptiles? Would it work? But
any animal,
isn't their blood,
so I guess
like,
warm-blooded.
Super warm because they're dragons? But then I'm also like, so not on lizards, not on fish, not on sharks. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Definitely cats and dogs.
Yes. Arya slapped by the waif. She's like, what the fuck was that for? She's like, are you Arya Stark? Because Arya Stark's the kind of person who chews her lip when she thinks. And Arya's like, oh, shit. The waif then tells Arya a little bit about her past and how she became servant of the many-faced god. Somewhat. There's a little bit of truths and lies in it. She claims that she was the only child of an ancient house, her father's heir. Her mother died when she was little, and at age 6, her father wed again. Her stepmother was pretty nice to her until she gave birth to her own daughter, and then she thought that the waif should die so her child could inherit all of the wealth. The stepmom sought favor with the many-faced god, but was unwilling to actually, like, go through with the whole sacrifice. So instead, she tried to poison the waif herself, but she did not die.
When the healers in the House of the Red Hands told my father what she had done, he came here and made sacrifice, offering up all his wealth and me. Him of many faces heard his prayer. I was brought to the temple to serve, and my father's wife received the gift. Something about this story, like, from the very beginning, just sounds like the Dance of the Dragons, right?
Yeah.
Only child of an ancient house. That doesn't work quite, but, you know, of that age, of that time. Her father's heir. Her mom died when she was young. At age 6, her dad weds again. Her stepmom's kind until she gives birth to her own daughter and then wishes the waif would die. So something like that comes up, like Princess and the Queenie.
Yeah, very twisted Cinderella story. I want to know about the House of the Red Hands. How come they got such a fun name for their hospital?
Fun names? I mean, that's like bloody. I'm like, oh,
that's
red
what
hands.
Makes it fun.
Oh my god.
So Arya's all like, wait, is it true? Maybe. The waif's like, there are lies in there as well. There's an untruth and also an exaggeration. And Arya guesses correctly that, oh, the many-faced god didn't take all of your father's wealth, just 2/3 of it. And the waif agrees. She's like, you got it. And they almost start to bond because she's like, wait, what was the lie? And the waif was like, the lie was the lie. And she's like, wait, really? And then they get interrupted by the kindly man who wants his daily debriefing with Arya.
There's a lot in here with the waif, and I liked this interaction a lot. I like the use of untruths, right? They remind me a little bit of Sansa with the unkiss with Sandor, with her believing that she kissed Sandor, whether it happened or not, and it seems like most people point to not, because, you know, at the time, it was not. And
we were there.
I don't know, just something about it connects. She's literally wondering about this in the Veil, you know? I mean, it comes to mind. She's thinking about it, so interesting. When Sweet Robin's in her bed, in that Elaine one, I think, she thinks, you know, about when he's in her bed, about how she's like, ugh, get him. Or no, I'm sorry, in the last couple Sansas even, she's like, get him out of here. And she thinks about the Hound kissing her because Sweet Robin's trying to kiss her. And it's very much not like the kiss she imagines from Sandor. Usage of waif is interesting with the backstory in mind, right? 14th century French origin for the word waif. It also, it's kind of referring to unclaimed found items was the original usage of it, or something that's gone astray. And of course, it became the root for the phrase to waive, like waiving rights.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
It was basically, yeah, it became used to describe throwing away stolen goods and later on stray animals and people. And then in the late 20th century, it started to be used to describe like an unusually thin and young woman. So the waif we see today, but with her story very much thrown away, discarded, unclaimed found items, you know, not wrong.
Interesting. I did not know that about the origins of that word. And yeah, I love that she's an embodiment of both of those things.
What's interesting is in Children of Dune, there's a character described as a waif as well, which is kind of what made me think of it. Because I'm like, oh, interesting that Herbert wanted to use it as well as like a Herbert adapted this from George. Just kidding. But yeah, it makes me think like, oh, okay, this is interesting to use for the story. Made me want to look it up a little bit now, especially because I was like, oh shit, we're recording this today. And something that you pointed out, the three serving days and the moon and the non-moon. there's another rule of three here, right? Not the same moon, obviously. There's another rule of three, two-thirds of her father's wealth, the waif says. Mm-hmm. And Arya says, so two out of three specifically. So I thought that was interesting. There's like one third, one third, one third. And it kind of brings up like the triple moon symbol, Hecate, right? The triple goddess of the moon and the idea that each represents the maiden, the mother, and the crone. And I don't know, I just kind of thought that was kind of, you know, kind of interesting to bring that back because you're looking at like Artemis, Selene, and Hecate as all three faces. And you have Catelyn has now kind of become the crone in a way where she was the mother and the maiden, the mother, the crone. Like Catelyn's been all three of those as a cycle of life, birth, life, and death. You know, that's the cycle of the three. And now Arya's kind of going through those. She's becoming somewhat similar to the crone in the way she's becoming close to the stranger, right?
That's true. She is. She's becoming, I don't know, kind of all of them. Absolutely. Especially when, you know, people discuss Arya as being this very gender fluid character as well. So I love, though, this idea of her as being all three of these like triple. I mean, she's absolutely changing faces in all three at different times.
It's like to conquer life and death, you have to embrace those three phases, right?
Yeah.
So,
and we definitely see these in other characters as well, right? Like I know that there's a lot to discuss in Daenerys' story about the triple goddess.
Yes, 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 yes.
The kindly man asks Arya to share three new things, speaking of threes, she has learned. She mentions Darion's death, and little Narbo wants to be an oarsman, now that his fingers will not bend. Quince and Alaquo fought and left the ship, but she thinks that they're going to come back. He's like, think, or are they going to come back? And then there's the final one about the black singer who slept at Happy Port is dead. She goes, he was really a deserter from the Night's Watch. Someone slit his throat and pushed him into a canal, but they kept his boots.
Good boots are hard to find.
Just so. She tried to keep her face still.
Who could have done this thing, I wonder?
Arya of House Stark. She watched his eyes, his mouth, the muscles of his jaw.
That girl. I thought she had left Braavos. Who are you?
No one.
You lie.
She says as much, like, that she was trying to test it and see what would happen, but I do think it is interesting that she confesses because she's just like, what's gonna happen? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? And she's trying to figure out the rules of this whole place and this new life that she has.
She started to, like, mirror language back to them, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
Right? Because, and he mirrors back to her, but it's like Andy Bernard in The Office. He's a big proponent of a person that does this. he mirrors personalities back on people to get ahead. And she's doing that here, you know, by saying the same stuff he would say. Just so. That's what he said to her several times.
Interesting.
She answers it trying to keep her face still. Though also when she says, just so, in my head, all I can hear or see is my own cat making like a sneering face at me when I try to tell her to do stuff. So I'm just hearing her like, just so. But also he repeats her own line back to him, right? This is what she said to Brusco when she brought the boots.
Yes.
She said, good boots are hard to find, even if they're too small.
I think that's
so that's what he says back. He's like, oh, interesting. Good boots are hard to find, they say, they being you.
Yeah.
He already knew.
Right. Like, I think that's so interesting that he knew what she said. And like, also that she says the just so again. Like, I think that's such a good call. I didn't realize that. I was like, huh, that line, that's the same as earlier, but I didn't realize he was saying it back to her. And it kind of speaks to him asking her, like, are you sure that Quince and Alaquo are going to go back to, like, the boat? Do you know this? Or is this just something that you think? And the fact that he kind of knows that she would say that speaks to what the sorts of skills it takes to become a faceless man. Like, to imitate someone, you have to get to know someone so well that you can predict what they would do. Which we see ends up, like, Pate Pate, quote unquote, Pate, but not Pate. The not Pate says things that we know Pate would never say, but you have to like get to know someone so well to play them.
Oh, that's interesting, actually. I didn't think about that with Pate. That's like a good point.
Well, that's why I thought it was interesting that you called out the kindly man said that. He knows Arya so well to an extent that he knows what she would say.
I mean, I think it also is lending to the idea that he actually knows what she said, whether it's from people spying on her or whether there's some sort of collective hive mind that he's able to see things through. I don't know, but it seems that something's afoot there.
Interesting. Well, the kindly man says, all right, well, you're going to go to bed with some warm milk from the waif, and we end the chapter with the following. I mean, Arya was like, I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't expect fucking milk.
That night, she dreamed she was a wolf again, but it was different from the other dreams. In this dream, she had no pack. She prowled alone, bounding over rooftops and padding silently beside the bank of a canal, stalking shadows through the fog. When she woke the next morning, she was blind. Oh, Nymeria's lonely. Nymeria doesn't have her pack.
Yeah, but this isn't Nymeria, right? Because we're on rooftops? Like, maybe Nymeria's like, wow, I'm lonely because finally my brain's fucking quiet.
Maybe, right?
Because this is
some sort of disconnect, yeah.
Yeah, I assume, like, this is a cat, and I'm like, I don't know what it feels like, the quiet brain, but not in, like, a cool, like, way.
Please clear it. Unless she's on rooftops, you know? Nymeria might be on rooftops right
now. Honestly, what was it? What was that line? There was a line from back then. Nope, that was juggling, not climbing a tree. Sorry. John being like, I would love to see ghosts juggle. That would be great. I don't know. I thought it was like, I would love to see some wolf climb a tree. Then I was like, nope, that was juggling. Never mind. Anyways, Arya, cat of the canals, drinking milk at the end, because drinking milk is associated with cats, even though you're not supposed to give cats milk. It is. You're not supposed to give them milk.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
But it's that. Yeah. And then also, I don't know, it makes me think even of like mother's milk, as we talk a lot about the Lady Stoneheart stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I didn't think about that for mother's milk, but I love it. And interesting that as Aemon is about to die blind.
Oh,
we have her blind but awakening. I don't think it's like a real pass off, but it's an interesting just parallel going on around the same time. And of course, and this is the most widely debated conversational topic in Arya, right? Of like, so the blindness is a gift and not a penalty for what we know. If you're trying to get promoted in the House of Black and White, this is the next step. She's not being punished having her vision taken away. This is the next part of the training. So Arya is being rewarded for deliberately not following the rules. What does it mean?
I don't know.
Right. And I mean, I have so many ideas racing in my head. I don't think there is any, you know, known answer necessarily, but this is the part of Arya's plot I find so fascinating. It could go in literally either direction because the Faceless Men, one, know who she is, two, are letting her break the rules, and three, are rewarding her internally in their society for breaking the rules. So, I mean, maybe that's based on, you know, to come back to cults, we've been talking a lot about cults, and at the beginning, sometimes in order to get someone in to break them in, you need them to believe that it's okay or that it's different. We come back to that idea of like Littlefinger, you know, making Sansa complicit in murder, and that's why she stays. But you have to have a reason to get so wrapped up that you stay, right? So maybe encouraging her poor behavior is to get her to be, you know, signing a lifelong contract, quote unquote, with them. Who knows? But I don't know. I'm very interested. I want more answers to this.
What you're saying about them showing leniency and being like, it's okay, right? Like the idea that it's okay to falter and like instilling faith makes me think even of John being like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to desert. I just did my vows, but I got to go. And then his friends all bringing him back. And everyone knows that he tried to desert. So I'm like, is it supposed to be like that? But it's pretty different because she didn't, I don't know, she didn't not kill Darian. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like that was not
know.
On the record for the day, you know?
But then maybe do they think like, oh, that was good? Because, and then she comes back with a trophy? which is weird, not a thing you're supposed to do? Or are they like, that's why we recruited her. We saw a lot of talent in this one. She's just so good at killing.
Right, and then it comes to leverage over, like, they have a daughter of a great house here.
Yeah. True.
And we see, you know, with people of great houses coming over to Westeros in general, Princess Sarah Targaryen, right, ending up in Essos and not wanting to come home and being happy of what she had built and being an asset to them for having a Targaryen on deck. I mean.
Yeah, or the Waif. Oh, God, what if she has to steal Lyanna's face and be like, I'm going to go in. I'm going to go infiltrate.
Interesting. I mean, that is like...
That makes no sense. I'm just saying, I'm just improvising random shit.
I mean, who knows if the Waif, like, what part of her story was a lie? Obviously, we don't actually know what the lie really was. Like, they joked and became kind of almost friends over it, but we don't actually know the lie, us readers. So, like, maybe she is a child of an ancient house. Maybe they collect children of ancient houses. There's the theory of Tyrek having gone there, being a boy that we see there with curly blonde hair.
Right.
Possibly taking the gift, but, like, I don't know how much I believe that, but, you know, like, maybe they are collecting great house people.
Yeah, or, I mean, like, because the Waif makes sense, because they're like, wow, really sucks that that happened to her, but how valuable for us, a person who looks like a child all the time, really useful for our purposes. Whereas Arya, if they have very few, I guess, women... Or, like, you know, people assign female at birth as well. Like, those kinds of bodies at the House of Black and White. Or they're like, what a great asset. We don't have anyone who can do this right now. And it would really get us into some other places. So, I don't know.
And maybe we'll have a little more to think about next week with the blind girl and the ugly little girl as we get to dance and as we get closer to finishing the chapters.
Because,
I mean, I didn't read the next chapter yet before
me
this
neither.
On reread. I stayed here. I wanted to have a finite place to look. So we shall see. Next week, we might have new thoughts about it all and change our entire belief system around. You just don't know.
Yeah, actually, you really might. So anyways, it's fun.
Reading these Arya chapters is really interesting, like, in a row, and, like, starting to really unravel Braavos and seeing where George is writing about certain parts of Braavos and where he's holding back.
Yeah, actually.
It gets me a little invigorated for the Winds of Winter again. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I want the Winds of Winter. I love Aeswaf again. Oh, God. Who knew?
Yeah. And as you said, she and the Waif almost became friends. That was something that I hated that they did in the show.
They made a show about this?
No, this is based off the show. So I'm really glad that George had Arya and the Waif becoming friends, because in the show, you know, they were enemies because girls can never be friends. I don't know if you know this.
Well, that's why we're not friends.
Yeah, that's why we're not friends.
Free both of us.
You can free us both. Not by doing this, but if you wanted to keep up with the next episode. You can follow us on social media at Girls Gone Canon on Twitter. That's C-A-N-O-N. Same thing on Blue Sky. Or maybe you have thoughts that you would like to send us. You can send us an email at girlsgonecanon@gmail.com.
We also always get comments from our friends at patreon.com/girlsgonecanon. Feel free to leave comments on the episode there. We would love to hear from you. And... you know, speaking of those patrons of ours, those wonderful patrons of ours who sponsor every single episode that we put out, you wouldn't be getting them if they didn't exist. Big thank you to them. They're going to tell you where you can subscribe to us to hear our beautiful voices come ringing through every week.
You can catch Girls Gone Canon on any of the following streamers.
On Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast, Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Audible, and Amazon Podcasts.
You can also join us on Patreon, where if you join the Thunder tier above, you have access to a Discord and monthly happy hours and things like that.
And by joining the Discord, you get access to a bunch of great channels, including but not limited to memes and shitposting channel, Fashion Hour. There are multiple channels for historic materials, A Song of Ice and Fire. There's a pets channel, which I think is probably the most important channel of all. Respectful Thirsting, because there's a channel for that. Come by, join the community. It's a lot of fun, and you won't regret it.
thanks for joining us. We'll be back with the end of Arya, of published Arya.
No!
I know.
End of Arya. I
have been Arya. I've been one of your hosts, Chloe.
And I've been another one of your hosts, Eliana.
See you soon.
Meow, meow,
see you
meow.
Next, Camel Cunt.
Meow, meow, meow. I guess meow, we should meow. Have talked more about the shellfish. That is, like, a pretty important part to both the chapter and our lives.
I mean, look, I don't mean to be shellfish, but I whoa. Don't want to share that with everyone. Whoa.
Whoa.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.